Hello, and welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I am your science officer for this episode, Maddie Lipchansky. And the captain.
And I'm a captain. I'm Clayton Ashley.
That's right. And this week it is episode 5 of season 2, A Night in Sick Bay, and the week of October 16th, 2002. This week, we are also joined by a special guest, friend of the show, video essayist, streamer, and more, Jenna Stuber. Welcome.
Of all the ways to pronounce my last name, that was one I've never heard before.
Did I do it wrong again? I lost. You told me how to pronounce it before the show started, and then I was like, great. Because I was like Stuber, and that's wrong.
It's Stever. It should be pronounced Stever. Like it has two
God
E's, basically.
Fucking Christ. It's Jenna Stever. It's spelled differently than that, but it's Jenna Stever.
Well, we'll give you this, though. You're our first guest. You're our first guest since we've had little crew member names. So if you want to decide what kind of crew member you are.
Yeah, do you want to be the tactical officer? Or do you want to be science officer?
I want to be doctor. I want to be the medical lube replacer. I think that's my goal.
Okay, we're joined by friend of the show and medical lube replacer.
Somebody's got to do
Stever.
It.
Welcome to the show, Jenna.
Thank you for having me. Except also, fuck you. This show is so bad. This show is so bad.
Our show, Star Trek Enterprise.
Oh my god.
Okay, but our show was good.
This show is good. Yeah. This show is very good. Yeah, yeah. And
we'll have a good time.
Yeah, I'm thankful for you recapping this show so that I don't have to watch even a single additional episode of this show.
Yeah, we try to you can watch along with this podcast if you'd like to. No. It is not recommended.
It's not worth it.
Yeah. Honestly, this is a thing that I'm looking forward to is beyond this show, you haven't watched a ton of Star Trek, right?
No, here and there. I watched the one with Make It So. No, what with not the OG.
Patrick
yes,
Stewart.
Yes, I watched the Patrick Stewart one growing up. And then as an adult, I watched through Deep Space Nine and enjoyed
cool.
it.
Correct.
But I don't retain any information about the universe itself.
Good. You don't have to because guess what? It's our universe.
That's right.
Yeah.
This is actually what a lot of people don't know about Star Trek is that this is going on right now in the universe, really, for real. A lot of
we take place. We're canon.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's exciting. Wow. Yeah, if I had known that, I would have chosen a better position on the ship. It's
well, no, you're trapped replacing lube for all time now, and I'm so sorry about
worst
that.
Worst gigs.
That is true.
You know, worst gigs. Oh. I don't have to clean There's worse the
gigs. You could be the ship's bat catcher.
Yeah. I could be the ship dog.
You could be ship dog, somebody's, which does seem bad.
Somebody's got to clean out that decontamination room. Ugh. I mean.
Yeah. I assume they just hose it down. There's got to be a grate in the bottom.
God, yeah. That's like working the 10 a.m. shift at Berghain or something. Just like awful. Berghain. I can't pronounce anything German coded today. Okay. Anyways. Do we want to talk about the week of October 16th, 2002 together as a family?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Something other than Star Trek, please.
Great. Something. Okay. I want to start with the least interesting thing this week, which is television. Mm-hmm. Nothing too exciting. We have smashed the Vile Dawson this week, though. The Vile Dawson and his horrible creek. We are hearing the lamentations of their women. It is awful. It is a bloodbath. We're killing Dawson, which is great. We're getting our lunch eaten by the usual suspects, you know. Our wives and kids, our 60 minutes is twos, etc. There's no ALDS anymore. That's banished. The only exciting television news really around this time is that Nickelodeon has premiered its show You Pick Live, which we all love. Ooh. They've of course expanded on You Pick with Henry and June of Kablam, and it's now live. It's a live show. Which I do not recall.
Should I remember this? I was going to say.
I don't think so. I don't remember this. It was one of the first things where you could, like, I remember the original show where you could go online and be like, this is the show we want to watch this week on a network.
Oh.
And you could, like, vote on, like, what show you wanted to watch in this time slot. And they would just run a rerun of the show you wanted to watch.
Oh, of shows that already exist. That's You're funny. Not, like, creating a new show on the fly. Damn. Okay.
No, we can't do that. I mean, maybe now with the magic of AI. Which we all love and we love to use.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The
thing.
No, I actually don't have much to say about the pick. I'm just thinking this was the time where, like, we've talked about America's Got Talent. No,
No.
The first one of those. American Idol.
American Idol.
That did cell phone voting.
Yeah.
That was big at this time.
That was innovative.
Oh, by the way, to vote for Clayton, text 11 to the first seven numbers you think of. And, usual text message rights apply. Yeah, so just if you want to vote for Clayton, text 11. If you want to vote for Jenna, 12. Me, 13. Don't. Just to see who wins the episode. We'll check the numbers.
Yeah. And who will be moving on to the final
round. Whoa!
Yeah. You actually,
please,
Jenna,
don't
if you
vote
win,
for me.
You actually have to, you actually have to replace me or Clayton to watch the rest of this show.
Please no. Please no. Please don't.
Okay. I'm moving on to music because it's there's a lot of it. There's a lot of music, movies and music this week, and one big news event. So I want to get to those. So there's eight new songs on the Billboard chart this week. I'm just going to get through them real quick. At number 92, Downfall by Trust Company, all one word, with the word trust in caps. Do we remember the band Trust Company?
No.
Nobody does. I listened to it.
Do you?
I don't know. I like put it on, and I was like hoping to be like, maybe I remember Trust Company. It's like new metal slop. It's like nothing.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's really funny for a new metal band to be called Trust Company. Is there something about that? Like,
yeah.
Are you like an industry plant or what is this?
Yeah, I was expecting Christian rock for some reason.
Yeah, I really, maybe they are. The word trust is in all caps. If you want to do some sleuthing about the band Trust Company.
That probably just means it's an acronym.
Oh.
Well, yeah, that's my guess.
Well, now I have to look. I listened to the song, but I did not. They're from Alabama, and they're just an American, and they're also known as Trust Co. The Lonely Position of Neutral is their first album. That's a bad name.
Trust Incorporated.
It's just like, you can name your band anything. I just don't know, like, why would you, literally anything except for like the Beatles, you could name your band. So why would you do that, you know?
I've named my band the Beatles too. It's equal to the Beatles.
Yeah, I do too, but it's spelled B-O-E-T.
Just to fuck with me specifically. Anyways, at number 89, Fat Joe featuring Genuine, Crush Tonight, a song that's about crushing tonight. It's about going to a party, getting drunk, crushing that evening.
I see. Mm-hmm. I see.
I mean, I like that kind of song, so...
Yeah, that song is definitely a kind of song that exists to this day. Fat Joe, we love you, etc. Okay. At number 79, a really weird one. It's Eric Sermon featuring Redman, a song called React, which I remember. The only thing I remember about it is it got like a sort of like a... It samples a Bollywood song for the hook, and it's got like a... But it's got a camel in the music video, and in the song, the hook is attributed to, in the lyrics, quote, an Arabic chick. But it is an Indian woman singing a song from a Bollywood movie.
Huh.
Just not great.
Well, that's interesting. Contextually. Yeah, I mean, it sucks. But it's like, why would you pretend that you were sampling from an Arab person?
Well, because it's got sort of like a... It's got that sort of like... It doesn't sound too... Like, I don't know. The song it samples is a song from... It's called Chandika Badan from a movie called Taj Mahal, and it's Mina Kapoor is the singer, one of the famous playback singers. I guess you, out of context, it sounds a little Arabic. It's got that like sort of scale, but so does a lot of Indian music because of its Persian roots. I don't know. It's not great, but it does speak to the horrible Islamophobia at the time. At number 71.
Yeah.
Matchbox 20's Disease off their, like, when they were, like, trying to still make it in 2002, and they had a weird album called, like...
Yeah, they're kind of done by now, aren't they?
It was called Exile on Mainstream. I believe that album. It's really not good. It's not good. Number 65, Shania Twain's I'm Gonna Get You Good. I'm pro Shania.
That's now finally some good music.
Yeah. There's some weird ones here. And number 63, a song called Starry-Eyed Surprise by British producer Oakenfold, featuring, of course... Shifty Shell Shock from Crazy Town, which samples Everybody's Talking by Harry Nilsson. And I listened to the song in advance of this episode, and it made me really upset, and I will not make you do it. But if you'd like to hear the dulcet guitar tones of Harry Nilsson's Everybody's Talking, and then you want to hear the guy from Crazy Town sound like the guy from Crazy Town, do I have the song for you? I'm not sure.
Wow, that's exactly what I've been looking for.
I know it's exactly what everyone's been looking for in a song, so that's there for you if you'd like it. Number 55 is You Know You're Right, the last Nirvana song ever recorded that was put on their 2002 Best Of record that was released at this time, came out this week. And at number 41, Madonna, with the theme from Die Another Day, which comes out in November this year, not in like a month.
Holy shit.
Okay.
Remember Die Another Day?
What a preview of that movie. The song is...
That was like a jump scare. Okay. Saying Madonna was on the charts in 2002 was like, that was...
But then the swerve.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
The Die Another Day song. Okay, I was very big into Bond at this time.
Really?
You know, high school friend. Okay. Weirdly, yeah. I was like high school, middle school, but really into even the old James Bond movies.
I mean, yeah, it's constructed for teenage boys to like. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's
is
actually
Die Another Day the one where the guy's got the bullet lodged in his brain, or is that a different one?
This is, I feel like there's a guy
the
who has,
not enough.
I think there's a guy with diamonds in his skin in this one. this one has got, it's got an invisible car. He like rides a tidal wave. It's very, there's like a, actually kind of a sick sword fight in an ice castle. But it's, the song is very, very atypical of a Bond song.
How sick.
Yeah, which is why the Madonna one.
It's very Madonna-y, if I recall.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's dancier in the normal. It's more electronic. It doesn't have quite as many of those, or if I can recall, any of those kind of like the horn cues that kind of give you a little bit of like, oh yeah, this is a little James Bondy. But wow, I forgot when this came out. It was a complete surprise.
Yeah. So we can talk about the movie and maybe even as a candidate for a watch 'em. I think.
Revisit.
If we're
going to
talk about the cursed media
you used to love, Clayton.
I know. We have to.
We have to visit the accursed media of 2002.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Madonna, let's talk about the movies, shall we?
Okay. Shall
we? Yes.
So okay. I'll bring us.
Oh,
in
wait,
first.
Wait. We do have something we don't normally do. It's a music update on a song we talked about in the last episode.
Oh, right.
It's not actually out yet.
The Ketchup song by Lost Ketchup?
Yeah, of course. It's the Ketchup song. And we talked about it and it was like, but this sounds so familiar. Why does this sound familiar? It turns out that the main chorus is intentionally meaningless words or kind of like Spanish gibberish, as Wikipedia puts it, because it's somebody trying to imitate Rapper's Delight. I said a hip hop, the hippie to the hip hop hop. And so when you look at the lyrics, even they're like the Spanish translation. So it doesn't clearly look like that. But then you listen to the song, and you're like, oh, that's exactly it, and it makes the song even better.
It's even better. It's the Spanish version of that Italian song where he's pretending to sound like English. So yeah, our friend Madonna at number 25 this week, premiering the notorious Guy Ritchie flop remake of Swept Away, with his then wife Madonna starring as the female role, and the son of the guy that started the original as the guy.
Weird.
Flop.
Oh.
Yeah. Like this is Madonna Renaissance time, and they were really destroying everything at the wall, and Guy Ritchie made her be the star of a movie. Which is not good in it. And the movie's bad.
Which is too bad. She was good in some of the movies that she appeared in.
She is...
I never saw this one.
Yeah, she is great in a lot of the movies she's been in. I love her in Desperately Seeking Susan. I love her in A League of Their Own. She's great in a lot of things.
Yeah.
The film Swept Away, she is not great in.
Oh, right. Yeah, she's in A League of Her Own.
Yeah. But down, let's go back to the bottom. I was doing a little Madonna segue.
Number
46 is the comedian, the documentary Comedian about Jerry Seinfeld's early career. A normal guy... who is good, and I like the things that he says about everything in the world.
I'm trying to think if I'd rather watch that or B-movie.
I would rather watch B-movie.
Because I think B-movie.
B-movie is not a documentary about the time that Jerry Seinfeld is a young stand-up, which is when he was dating a high schooler.
You mean when he was in his 40s and dating a high schooler?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
That's right.
Is that when the
documentary
is covering?
This is pre. Yeah, sorry. It's like somewhere between the film Comedian and B-movies when Jerry Seinfeld. Oy, yay, yay. And then he went on to say a bunch of normal stuff about a lot of things.
Yeah. He's still relevant in our current moment, I'm sure.
Absolutely, and I'd love to hear what he has to say about certain world events. At number 28, 2002 alert, It's Bowling for Columbine this year.
Oh.
Oh wow, that is a 2002.
What's everybody's relationship to Michael Moore?
None. Never. I don't think I genuinely don't think I've ever seen a single of his movies.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I was a huge, when I was an obnoxious liberal teenager, I was so into Michael Moore's movies. I loved this. I saw Fahrenheit 9/11 in theaters. I bought his book.
Wow.
Where he basically accuses George W. Bush of orchestrating 9/11 with the Saudi government.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is the thing, is I was actually trying to remember, and I don't know if I saw this one, but I have seen Fahrenheit 9/11, Sicko, and Capitalism: A Love Story.
Yeah, I didn't think
Sicko being the most
memorable
of those.
Yeah,
to me,
I didn't hang on to Capitalism. I saw Sicko in theaters as well. Mm. Sicko, the one where he gets a bunch of doctors from Cuba and he tries to bring them on a boat to America and they won't let him. It's interesting, but Bowling for Columbine, a very seminal moment in the sort of, like, if you're going to talk about the, you know, the not my president ass era that's beginning at this time. At number 27, The Vile Dawson Himself, starring in The Rules of Attraction, the adaptation of the Bret Easton Ellis movie, the book, novel book. I've talked before and I'll do it again. And at number 22, Punch Drunk Love, the PTA, I believe, great movie.
That's the one that was Adam Sandler's foray into serious acting, right? One of his earliest.
It was like his first ever.
Was it his earliest?
It's really good. Yeah. It's got an incredible John Bryan score. It's like a small, it's a really short, it's got a great Philip Seymour Hoffman performance. Really good movie, in my opinion. But at number 16, I'm really glad that I'm here today with such video game luminaries. Because at number 16, is Pokemon Forever Celebi, Voice of the Forest.
Not fair. That's not fair. I would have rather talked about, like, Doom.
I was in my mind. I was like, is this when Doom came out?
Is it Doom?
I saw Doom. I'll say it's not Doom.
It's Pokemon number
4 ever.
I didn't see
colon
this one.
Celebi hyphen Voice of the Forest.
I love that this came out in theaters, because, you know, if this dropped today, at best, it would be on Netflix. You know, it's nice to be in this era when these were getting pulled over from Japan and put on the big screen.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I did not realize that they kept coming out after Pokemon Movie 2000.
Wow.
There's quite a number of them. And I remember the first one because I made my parent... I think my mom was the one who had to take that bullet. Because they had, like, free Pokemon cards at the theater. And I wonder if they continued that, because you would get kids in the door just with that alone.
Mm. Yeah. Is Celebi a Pokemon? Is that a Pokemon? Celebi.
It's a vegetable.
I do remember
that
it.
Little guy.
Yeah, you it's use little, it in Mirepoix.
It's known as... Okay, see, here's the thing. Is if
I think
it's
it grants
not,
wishes or something.
I had... I'm once again speaking about my age on the podcast. But I had Pokemon Blue on my original Game Boy, and I knew all Pokemon, and I still know them all. But this motherfucker is number 251, which means he does not exist to me. and that's what I'll say about Celebi.
That's fair. It's I'll say is not an exciting one to get a title drop, like a name drop in the title. It's not like a fan favorite. This isn't an Eevee or a Pikachu.
It's not even the ancient Mew.
Yeah.
So looking into it, yes, exactly. And that's its equivalent in this one. And this was literally the next games that came out, Gold Silver, which was, that was my big one. That was the one I played the most with my brother. I got into it. I didn't even remember that that's what this one came from. So it's not very memorable.
Look at this. It's not even like a cool looking, this is a dopey ass Pokemon.
Yeah, this thing looks like shit. It looks like someone drew a Sharpie face on an onion. Get out of here, Celebi. As a podcast,
looks like a
our position is we hate you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Go back to Digimon, Celebi. Go evolve into a sexy devil or angel. at number eight is the film Tuck Everlasting, which I've never seen. But it's about a little boy who lives forever.
I saw that in high school.
Mm-hmm. Did it awaken anything?
That was an English teacher put this on because I don't want to do a class today.
Yeah. Kind I remember of reading movie. It in high school, but
yeah.
Movies.
I remember seeing
we probably read it too. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I spent a lot of time.
It's fine.
In New York City at this age. And all I recall is in the subway a lot, people ripped off half of that tea. Make a little sign said, fuck everlasting. That's all I remember.
it's pretty good. Gotta
gosh,
give
the
it
beauty
up to
of
New
ripped
York.
Of ripped New York advertising signs.
It's really good.
Bravo.
It's the best, it's
really
the best city in the world, baby. Go Knicks. I'll not talk about the Knicks. I will not talk about the Knicks on this podcast, I promise. You'll have to find me. If you find me, hey, here's a challenge to our listeners. If you find me in real life, you're allowed to talk to me about the Knicks. And I will talk to you about the Knicks all day. Okay. At number seven, the horrible looking film Knockaround Guys, which I don't know if you guys saw this.
No.
I have not seen it. It is Brian Koppelman who did Rounders and Billions and some other things. And it just looks like more fucking American Guy Ritchie shit. I don't know. It's like
it's what it looks like.
Yeah, it's Dennis Hopper, John
Malkovich,
Seth Green, yeah, Vin Diesel, and Barry Pepper. Yeah.
And Barry Pepper.
Oof. What? And this was number six?
This was number six. This movie made...
I never heard of this movie. 15, and it's some big names in it.
It made $14 million, this movie.
Well,
on a budget just the day. Of $15 million. So, flop.
It's only $900,000.
It's on it.
Flop Iana. I mean, if this feels
it's
like
on
one
the
of those
Roku
movies,
channel, so you can catch up easily.
I mean, it looks like one of those movies that's like destined. Like, it looks like you wonder if the Blockbuster Corporation made this movie, you know, like it just looks like it should go.
It looks like something you would find in one of those big cardboard barrels at a Walmart. And then you would be like, oh, is this a Guy Ritchie film? And you'd buy it on the off chance that it was.
No, you've been tricked. It's Brian Koppelman.
$5 wasted.
He did not direct it, I don't think, but he's the writer. And number six, White Oleander, which a disturbing and depressing movie that I saw, I believe, in theaters. Not much to say about it. Number four is, of course, The Transporters here, guys. It's this early.
Oh, my God.
Oh, the first one.
The Transporters, 2002. Isn't that crazy?
That's grim. That's how I feel about that. I feel bad about entering the era in which we have to deal with this. Who's the dude in that one? Who's the blockhead in that one?
Jason Statham.
Jason Statham, who I find, I'll say, charmless, charismatic black hole.
I will say,
finally
on,
someone said
early on. I'll say early on in his career, I find him pretty good in the film Snatch and like Crank, and but then they just kept doing it over and over, over and 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 over.
He's not, it's not leading man energy. Like, I think he's a good oppositional force, but
he's a good villain. He's a good big guy. Whenever I see him acting, I feel like he has, in a sort of defensive state, retreated into his mind palace and is just like on some sort of autopilot, and I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't know. But at number three is the Son of Lathan, Taye Diggs rom-com Brown Sugar, which I've never seen, but it sounds nice. It sounds chill.
Yeah, I love Taye Diggs. No, what's Taye Diggs? What's Taye Diggs up to? I hope he's doing well.
You know what's fucked up? You know what Taye Diggs is short for?
No.
Scott Day. His name is Scott. His name is Scott Diggs. He was fucked up.
I love that he went with Taye Diggs.
That's innovative.
That. Yeah.
it's innovation from a very sexy looking man. Son of Lathan also hot to look at. So maybe that movie is something I'll watch. I like it when two hot people are on screen and the camera's just kind of pointed at him.
Yeah.
What
if
can go wrong? We watched
Star Trek had some of that.
Do you not think Scott Bakula and T'Pol are attractive? I think
We'll talk about it. I don't want to jump ahead.
Okay. One last thing before we move on to this horrible fucking episode of television that I hated and almost killed myself watching. I think I promised to stop saying on air, and yet here we are. Two things are both sad. Sorry. One, three things. They're one's fine. The government of North Korea admits they have a nuclear weapons program the day after this episode airs, which is just table setting for the next 20 years of hell. And a couple of days before this episode was the start of those bombings in Bali where they blew up a nightclub and killed more than like 100 people. It was a jihadist group doing all this, but just sort of like the year of chaos that was 2002, just want more of this violence clearly set off by, it started with 9/11, whatever. But.
Well, I just feel like I remember the thing that punctuated or made this era feel different than the 90s when bad things also happened.
Yeah.
But they were very easy to be subsumed into like the background noise of everything's great, the economy's roaring, you know, whatever. We've defeated the Ruskies. To this era of like, anytime something like this happens anywhere in the world, it is bigger news because it's part of the terror, global terror.
Yeah, it's part of the whole thing. And two, so those two things.
Sounds,
yeah, it's accurate though.
Yeah.
It is incredible to think back at this era of like how good, I don't want to say good, how thorough war reporting was. Because it feels like when these sorts of things, because I think these things are still happening, but I do feel like the reporting that happens on these sorts of things is like nowhere near as prevalent. People don't care as much. And that's sort of, it's sort of weird. That's one of the weird things about listening to your show and sort of flashing back to this era is that like this, because people were afraid, they were more interested and concerned about this. And it's that in its own way is sort of grim, but it's like, feels like shit happens now in this vein and nobody reports on it. And if it gets reported on, nobody fucking cares.
Yeah, I mean, and that's sort of the whole thing, right? Where like, there was this era in the early 2000s where so much stuff was happening and we finally became aware and there was this fire hose of information all the time about it. And all it did was make people depressed and enervated. And now we're just in a sort of like, the news cycle has shortened to the point where like this is like the beginning of 24-hour cable news becoming very important in everyone's daily lives. And the news cycle shortened a lot, but now it's like the news cycle of 2001 seems almost like quaint and slow.
Yeah.
Whereas like people just don't give a shit for more than a couple of hours about anything anymore. And the things that do catch on seem like even more trivial because they have some other salacious hook, you know? But never the right stuff. Anyways, speaking of news events, the day this episode aired, George W. Bush, who you'll remember was president at the time in 2002, signed the authorization for use of military force against Iraq. The resolution was signed into law. And then, of course, George W. Bush settled in to watch this episode, I imagine. But like the Iraq war begins in earnest today in U.S. history.
Wow. The day we're talking. Boy, I'm glad I didn't know that going into this episode. Boy, I'm glad I didn't remember because, oh, wow. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was, we'd covered that it passed the House the previous week of our show. But it is now law.
And then the fighting starts like next year, right?
Yeah,
like
very
the first.
Yeah,
very soon. Okay,
and one of the more disastrous pieces of legislation in the history of the United States Congress, which is saying something. Evil act by an evil man. I don't know. Not much. There's not like, I don't have like a super amount of stuff to add about how bad the Iraq War was, but that's where we're at in culture. Is the bad shit is about to pop off extremely, and I think the tenor of the show Star Trek Enterprise is about to reflect that.
In the previous episode he gave of this show, I talked about a speech Bush gave where he is talking about how we need to get this passed so he can sign it.
Yeah.
And it just right there in the speech, he's talking about how Iraq, you know, it's violated things before and it will again, and we have to be really on top of things. And in this world where a 9/11 can happen, like he just goes right into how we have to do this because of 9/11. Like it's not, even though there is no connection, even before they had ginned something up, he's just saying that's why we have to do it. It's just that direct.
Well, he has one giant button that says 9/11 and he just has to bam, just hammer on that button to get stuff to happen. Yeah.
You know what? And it worked. Dick Cheney died surrounded by his loved ones as an old man. Yeah. You know, say what you will, but they got the job. They got what they wanted to do done. You know, great historical evil they wanted to kill. You know, 500,000 people or whatever it was. Anyways, that was the news.
Yeah, certainly was.
It certainly was the news.
I'll take us to a galaxy far away or something. I don't know.
I want to talk about how fucking much this show fucking sucks.
Yeah, let's do that.
Go.
What's your first thoughts? Get them off the dome.
So let's go, John. Just an overview on Star Trek Enterprise. So when I started listening to this excellent show, this podcast, I hopped on Star Trek Enterprise to take a peep at some of the context in which it released. And I happened to see that it got 98 episodes. And before I watched a single episode of it, I was like, oh, that's really a shame. Because at this era, if you hit 100 episodes, you would get syndicated, basically. And that is how you got like regular checks from the mail. And so if you managed to get to 100 episodes, you could hit syndication. And then everybody who worked on the show has a little bit easier from going on out. And it's one of the major things that like Netflix and all of these modern streaming services disrupted, is a way of making acting be like a legitimate living. And before I watched a single episode, I was like, well, that's really a shame. And now I'm like, I can't believe they got 98 fucking episodes. I can't believe it got 4 seasons. It's so bad.
There's like maybe 18 of them worth watching.
Oh my God. And that's a terrible hit.
Hey, Clayton. Clayton, that's high. Yeah. It's a high number. <you said. laughs>
I was like, after I said that. 18%.
Because like, there's like 5 Shran episodes, right?
Right.
How many Shrans are there? Not that many.
I thought there's more like 7. Maybe I'm just hoping there's 7.
Okay, I would say there are probably 12 to 15 episodes of this show that are any good.
Maybe it is more like 12 to 15. Yeah, oof.
Because I think we've encountered like 3 that we've liked and we're 2 seasons in.
Genuinely liked, yeah.
Wow. And it wasn't this one. I know it wasn't this one. We haven't talked about it
yet. No, it was unfortunately last week was the good episode that we liked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I couldn't I thought A Night in Sick Bay had the vibe of like A Night at the Ritz. Like it was going to be like a fun bottle episode. It's nothing. It's a nothing episode.
It is a bottle episode.
Didn't you also note that it was picked for, it had some awards?
Yes.
Or nominations?
This one was nominated for an award. It lost to Buffy's Conversations with Dead People, which is a stellar episode of that show. But the fact that it is even nominated is like, wow, a slow year for the Hugos.
Oof. Okay, so we'll get started with this, A Night in Sick Bay, which gets us kicked off.
You don't really chaps my ass about this episode.
Yeah.
It's Phlox. Sure. It's really Phlox heavy.
Yeah.
Who is the best character of the main crew of the show. He is the best character, I think. And he is kind of boring and an asshole this episode.
He was still the best part of the episode, in my opinion.
I know.
He's great. I found him a little more off-putting than he's been.
He was the only one who was talking back to Archer. And Archer fucking sucks. He sucked in every... I watched a couple episodes of season 1 to get a grounding on who all these people are. And this man fucking sucks ass every episode. Is he genuinely always like he is in this episode? Or is this something worse?
This is him at his absolute worst.
Okay.
Yes, he's extra pissy in this one.
He's really pissy in this one.
Bearable.
Speaking of the first scene, they're in the decon chamber. And they noted this because it's used in the advertising to make this show look more sexy than it is, because it's Hoshi rubbing the decon tam gel on
T'Pol,
who's rubbing it on Archer. And then the joke is we bend down, the camera pans down, and he's rubbing the stuff on little Porthos. Yeah. He's all gooey. I felt bad for the actor dog, but... good job. Porthos acting great in this episode, honestly. I will say that.
Yeah. I have a quick question for this first part of the episode that will carry through the rest of the episode. Mm-hmm. Why the fuck did you take your dog to the planet surface?
Well, Maddie!
Yes. Yes, yes. Why?
It's fucking infuriating because T'Pol asks, like, people in this episode ask why he did it, and he's like, well, you know, dogs deserve fresh air too. And it's like, you are so, what a miserable captain and human being. Because they already, they like, went into this having already fucked up this relationship, and they're like, oh, a creature that urinates and poops anywhere it wants to. Yeah, let's take them down with us.
Let's say, That's offensive to humans. You don't have to figure that out.
It's not a mystery.
Not only are they like, well, the dog that pisses and shits everywhere, it's like, the dog deserves fresh air. Okay, why'd you take it on a spaceship trip then? And B, why you take, you know, they've encountered these aliens before in a previous episode. They're the ones that think that eating is the same thing as sex. They think it's as offensive as sex, eating in public. And they're offended by watching the humans eat. And do you think perhaps those freakazoid prudes will love your piss and shit factory that you bring to their planet?
Yeah. And this is I would say, my major complaint. This is something that gets to my major complaint about Enterprise as a whole. Because this is a great huge plot hole. And the show is aware that this is a question that needs to be addressed, and they raise it, but they, in absolutely no way do they justify it. So, like, they know this is something wrong with this episode, but they refuse or can't. I think they genuinely cannot think of a reason to justify it, and so it's just like this weight that buries Archer underneath his own stupid, shitty behavior and makes it impossible to enjoy him. But this is my overall complaint from the episodes I've seen of Enterprise, which is that people making this show know how to structure a TV show. Like, they know, okay, here's a sexy, fun, there's a sexy, fun cold open that pans down to a dog. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, mystery. And it ends, you know, we've got these three plot threads we need to end. We get them, we boom, 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 three endings to the end of the episode. They don't know how to use that structure to make something good. They know the structure, but they don't have a grasp over, like, the creative juice that makes that reliable structure into something fucking good and worth watching. It's fucking crazy.
There is a dog. You get to see a dog.
There's a dog.
So yeah, as we mentioned, these are aliens we've known about before. They were on episode 22 in season 1, Voxala, which is the goopy episode for fans out there. Oh. They get offended by just about anything and everything. So why bring a dog?
And nobody is like, "Hey Archer, why'd you do that?" Like, it's like never like really.
No, T'Pol.
I don't know. They never.
They do.
They don't
ask
dig into
T'Pol.
They ask him
right
one time,
to his face,
but it should be the entire episode. Should be like, "Why'd you bring the dog, man? You're
an
idiot.
Why'd you bring the fucking dog?
Why'd you bring?" Like, he's never. He apologizes eventually. Sorry to skip around, but he apologizes eventually, but never admits that it was a wrong thing to bring the dog.
Yes, there's a great moment when T'Pol is trying to hold him accountable, where he's like, "What, just because my dog pissed on one of their sacred trees?" And she has, it's a great line delivery. It's really good. She goes, "It's understandable." And it's just like, it's very good. The acting is very good for T'Pol.
She is eternally doing so much with so little to do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
She is incredible.
She's great. And she's not even like as big of a known actor as fucking Archer. Anyway, he also should learn his lesson here, which is that Porthos can't leave the decontamination chamber because he's picked up a pathogen. Everybody else can leave, but he's got to stay. And then we get the music. Stopping here, just real quick, what do you
it's
think
miserable.
About the theme song?
It sucks. I hate it. It's so like, it sounds like a generic ripoff of a more popular song that I also would have hated.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm not into
for
it.
You.
Yeah.
Jenna, did you try my incredible trick?
No.
To listen to it at 1.5 speed?
No, I should have. It was not an accessible
option. It
kind of
bangs.
Yeah, it becomes a bit more of a bop.
Okay.
It kind of becomes a bop.
All right, so we come back in, and here's the thing why this is a bigger deal than it should be. Trip is very intent on getting more plasma injectors because they don't have a spare, and I kind of actually like this little walk and talk. And I was going to say this, Jenna, to your point that, like, oh man, this entire series, what is it doing? The first season, I think, has a notably lower just basics or worse. And this second season has already improved them to like a notable degree.
That's dire.
And it's like creative fun things or interesting ways to play with a scene and how it's shot. And I like how this little scene is Trip is working on something while he's talking to Archer. Yeah. And at the end of it, to like cut the scene, he like pulls up a door and that's like cut. And it's like, that was thoughtful and interesting. I just appreciate that they're getting there onto that almost like, you're not just sticking a tripod in one place and just talking to it. Or it's on that level better. But okay, they need 5 of these plasma injectors. One is on the Fritz. When they're down to 4, that's danger zone, because if any more break, they cannot warp. They're stuck. He really wants Archer to just apologize and get them another plasma injector. And then I noted another nice, you know, depth of field, interesting shot where Archer like is walking into medical. I'd say I noted these like interesting shots up early because we don't get as many of them later on. It feels like they ran out of steam there. But
one interesting section, we'll talk about it later. But when he does another like walk and talk in the medical bay where he's like taking a drink of water and then doing like a loop. Mm-hmm. That I noted that because that was also interesting.
We get to medical and we find out that actually Porthos's condition is pretty bad. His immune system is collapsing.
And dogs need their immune system.
Yeah.
Those are important.
I find it so... I was thinking about this. I was like, oh, it's so funny that Phlox is also the vet. And I was like, wait, to an alien, it's all the same, I guess. Like,
yeah.
I was going to say...
The one thing that's part notable later about this episode for me is that you realize that Phlox doesn't have a nurse. There's no nurse on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he sleep?
Is Phlox alone?
He had his girlfriend, sort of, who was kind of a nurse, and now she's gone forever.
Oh, yeah. Rip.
Rip.
His wife has not shown up yet, right?
None of them.
No.
None of his several
That'll be
wives.
Fun. None of them.
Yeah. None of his many wives have shown up.
This conversation, Archer's asking Phlox about, like, you got dogs on Denobula? You know, do you know anything about dogs? And he's like, well, we have this highly sought-after Denobulan lemur, and, you know, they kind of... the heads look the same and they usually have just one of them.
Can you imagine, by the way, if someone's like, do you have dogs on your planet? And you were like, well, we have earth monkeys.
It was confusing to me. But then he's saying that the Archer is getting pissy as well in this scene because he's like, the Cretacans were given our DNA and Porthos's DNA, and they should have checked that and told us if we had any, you know, dangerous pathogens that we should be prepared for. And, you know, you're already seeing where Archer's stance on this, which is that he didn't mess up.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else messed up.
This is another plot point that is raised and never addressed, because they never... He repeats this about 8 times because he thinks it makes him and his behavior okay.
Yeah, you're right about that.
They never clarify like what actually did happen with the DNA sequence.
Who messed up here?
Like,
why did this?
Yeah.
Actually, that's a very good point. I think in other episodes have been like, oh, we didn't know his DNA would cross plasma with the, you know, whatever. So the next thing is he's up in the bridge getting communications with Hoshi and T'Pol about the diplomatic situation. And this is where he finds out that scene you were just talking about, Jenna, where it turns out the bigger insult this time, because I guess I didn't say this specifically. Archer is all angry in the decontamination chamber in the very first scene because they just like went down. It took 6 hours. They were like waiting to like talk to someone in the lobby, and then they're like told to leave. Yeah. And he's like, why do we go through all of that for nothing? And they won't even tell us what we did. Okay, now they know what they did, and it turns out Porthos pissed on their holy tree.
Yeah, thank God somebody told them what the problem was.
Yeah.
Because what a mystery. Their dog pissed on the spaceship. Why could they be upset?
If I'm taking somebody down to the Hall of Diplomacy and my dog just starts pissing, I would be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You know what this is? You know what this is? This episode is an indictment of dog people.
I was going to say that.
Who just think their dog is building up fucking to it. Welcome everywhere they go. Oh, it's no problem. Fucking, by the way, I brought my dog. Is it fine? Is it fine if my dog's here? He smells like shit and he pisses everywhere, by the way.
This is the thing where it's like, there are times I might have categorized myself as a dog person. Maybe I'm a cat person. And whenever I think that, I'm like, I have to pull back. I have to not let myself do that because then this can happen.
Yeah.
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 I love dogs. I think dogs are cool.
I love dogs.
I love dogs cats. A lot. Much like Mila Kunis in Jupiter or something. I love dogs.
So yeah. this is actually literally where I just wrote down, Archer, why'd you bring the damn dog?
Why'd you bring the dog, but, Archer?
Why,
we're
Archer?
Not, we're not, no characters in the show are bringing that point up yet. This is still just him being captain and he can do whatever he wants.
It should be the first thing that they talk about.
Exactly. I think if I was to guess why that point is never really a point here, yeah. Other than when T'Pol correctly points it out later, I think it's meant to be a big characterization of who he is as a captain. Yeah. He is a dog guy. Yeah. He will bring his dog wherever he wants because that's his character trait.
Yeah, and it's a shitty one. It's a bad one.
Yeah.
Somebody around this point, somebody points out that he's like a career diplomat. It might be Trip. Somebody's like, you're a career diplomat. And I'm like, are you kidding me? This man? This man? This man is a diplomat? And he's throwing such an insane hissy fit about apologizing for what is an obviously bad thing to have happened that was his fault. It boggles. It boggles.
I will say, if you told me to apologize in the way you want him to apologize, I might also not want to do it.
I'm being into it. You have to eat your humble pie, Archer.
Yeah.
That's true.
And she's kind of just like you pointed out, Jenna, like she's relaying like the information very like directly. And it's like, I conveyed your sincerest apologies. Mm-hmm. And he says, where the hell do you get off conveying my sincerest apologies? That is, I would say, notably more shitty than he's been to her, even though he has been shitty to her, because that's part of the point of this episode. Yeah. But I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And she's like, this is about your pride, right? Or she points out nice, or in her way of being like, is this about your pride? Which I thought was great, because she could have said, is this about your dog? But like, no, just cut to like the point.
It's also, the vibe of this is so weird because it is like the two main women on the cast, Sato and T'Pol, doing the apologizing on behalf of the captain. Sato never gets an apology. T'Pol, we'll deal with T'Pol's response. But the vibe of this reminded me so much of a really particular kind of like older straight couple where the wife is always apologizing for the husband and the husband is never admitting any wrongdoing, never admitting any sort of behavior. But it's just like, this is a dynamic I see a lot, especially in the Midwest, where it's just like a woman apologizing for her man. Like that's her fucking role in this relationship. And that's so much of what, and to be clear, I had no idea that there was a romantic underpinning between T'Pol and Archer until they
Jenna. I watched this show all the way through once, and I'm now watching it my second time through in the last
me
18
too.
months, in the last 18 months. And they also didn't tell me that there's a romantic underpinning between Archer and T'Pol. Like there's no, like they gesture at it a couple of times with fucking Trip, I think.
Well, they also try. I remember this because it's the one like awkward scene in the first Shran episode, which is otherwise one of the few good episodes. But that's where they tried to get this thing going and it was clearly falling flat.
Yeah.
And also, they tried one or two other times and it's just not happening.
Yeah, this is mostly a question for you, Clayton, because you've watched all the episodes with me. Do you think they're like shooting her in a different way in this episode? Because she looks like particularly kind of snatched, I think. I think she's looking a little more vivacious in this one.
I don't know.
It's like a lot of shots from above. You just like her tits are much more just like.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because it's always they always gave her the like tight fitting clothes.
They
like,
really did,
beginning.
But it looks very tight in this one. I don't know. I think they tried to.
And they could have changed it for this season. I mean, I know that they like they sexied up the advertising for this episode, so maybe they were just going full bore.
Like maybe Lawrence Kansas will be jerking it in his fucking truck this episode.
Maybe.
Maybe. So, hey, Lawrence, if you're listening. The
stop.
Imaginary man I made up watching the show on his TV in his truck. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We get now some Archer, like, angry pacing around his room. He sees Porthos's empty bed, and, you know, that got me. Damn. I'll be honest. He goes down to sleep in
bed. Sad when a dog dies. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad when a dog is sick or a pet is sick. I get it.
Yeah, you can't explain that.
It only gets you so much.
Yeah, and being really angry and lashing out at everyone is a normal adult response to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, being really angry and making your wife text me sorry about the way he was acting at dinner.
It's so,
oh my lord.
He heads down to medbay with his pillow, and to wit, actually, to your point, Phlox says, "If I knew you were married, I would have thought you had been told to sleep on the couch."
Yeah.
Which. This is actually where Phlox gets interrogated by Archer, because again, he has to be shitty to like everybody in this episode, and he basically is claiming like, do you even know how like dogs work? Like, do you know how to work with a dog? And to your point, Maddie, he says like, I thought you were a people doctor. Okay, what does that mean? But also he's like, yes, I'm not just a vet, I'm a dentist, an herbologist, and he's like listing some other things, to which Archer's like, okay, I get it, you're really qualified. Like, geez, yeah, you're a jerk. Like, I noted here that sleeping Porthos is a fake. Fake Porthos.
Yeah, Porthos becomes fake for most of this episode, I believe.
At this point he's sleeping and now he's just fake.
I think later in the episode with like he has to become wet so they can use a different fake.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we have Archer going to sleep, and then we get some fun times with the med bay at night.
Yeah.
Fun and the biggest scare quotes you've ever seen in your entire life.
Yeah. Yes. And the fun and game section is watching an alien clip their nails, which was pretty grotesque. Great practicals.
Really, yeah, I was actually impressed by them. Yeah.
The nails looked great. I loved him cleaning his big, weird long tongue.
It was such a quick thing.
You see it. You see his big tongue in the pilot, and then like never again. So you know.
Oh, yeah.
So you see one of the first couple seconds of you seeing Phlox, you see his big weird tongue, and they never show it again. So you just know when he's talking. Normally, the rest of the show they never show it, but you know that he's fucking packing the whole time. He's got that shit rolled up in his mouth.
He does that and he wakes him up with the toe clipping. He does the tongue cleaning and he wakes him up again. And then it's feeding time and Archer's woken up because, you know, Phlox is actually kind of a new agey sci-fi doctor who uses animals for healing, leeches and whatnot. Yeah. And
he's always talking about the various glands of animals. Yeah.
The glands and the glands. The goos,
the glands, the secretions.
So then we get what I think is actually a good scene, at least in terms of characters making sense. Archer goes to the gym. He take his mind off of this. He decides to hit the gym, and he's on a treadmill next to T'Pol, who's also on a treadmill. And they start doing that like game of increasing the speed of their run after they say like kind of a cutting thing to the other. And so this just keeps going with each. They're like faster and faster. And eventually, T'Pol just says, "Why did you bring your dog?"
Why?
And I was like, "Thank you, T'Pol. Why did you?" And okay, he gives the weak excuse of like, my dog deserves fresh air. And it's like, you could have done the diplomacy, and then after everything was a-okay, said like, "Hey, I'd love to bring my dog down so you can meet him. We have pets on our world." Like, because you also know that other species may not have pets.
Yeah. Oh, you
like, I don't know why that's
a
weird thing.
Yeah.
She is just right in this whole scene, which is why I like it. And he's weak and slow and like the whole competition on the treadmill is great, because then her last thing is to just suddenly kind of stop and leave. He's like, "Where are you going?" He's like, "I just don't think I can keep up with you."
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a great parting line. That whole scene is good. If only it had built anywhere or been relevant in anything that happened. I mean, she accuses him of caring more about his dog than his ship. And it's like hard to deny it based on how he's been acting.
Yeah. And also like maybe you shouldn't bring something that's not potty trained. Like putting it
maybe bring
very
the,
clear.
Maybe if you're gonna bring your dog onto the onto like the politeness planet and to like fucking like Robert Rulzonia, like perhaps bring the wee pad with you. I don't know.
Anything.
Don't know. Yeah.
Just don't bring your dog.
Don't bring your fucking dog to space. Period. Why do you have your... This is like someone being like, "I'm going dark on a submarine for 3 years. I know. I'll bring my dog." And then your dog drowns because you're on a submarine. And everyone's like, "Why'd you bring your dog?" And you're like, "Leave me alone. I love him."
Yeah, it's...
Don't bring your fucking dog.
So along this line, another thing that Archer keeps complaining about is the ridiculous apology he's going to have to do for the Cretacans, because that's how they are. But this is where he gets it from Hoshi. And it turns out, just based on how he reads it, he's like, yeah, this isn't that bad. And then he hands it to Hoshi, and she has a funny little line where she says to Paul, like, do we have a chainsaw on the ship?
Yeah.
It would have been great if I hadn't been reminded with the little image of the episode on the Paramount Plus, because I think it is a fun joke when they get to it. But when it's surprise, when you have it spoiled, it's not as,
I was also like, oh, right, that's what happens. And you saw it. And I'm like, well, that's the whole time. I'm like, well, the joke is ruined, you fucking assholes. I'll find you, Mr. Paramount. Yeah, and I'll kill you.
Heading back down to medical, Porthos has a close call. All the alarms go off. Phlox is there. He's saying, the first treatment I tried didn't work. This makes Archer mad again, who he like helps to like stabilize him. But Archer's mad, and specifically he's mad. He brings up how T'Pol is like, oh, she's so, how could she think this way? How could she be so wrong about this? And now we get, I guess, the heart of this episode.
Is that what it is? Is that the part it is, Clayton? It's the heart?
Or the main theme? The problem
the
we're going to solve?
The pulsing member of the episode.
Gah. Phlox thinks it's about more than just Porthos and the Cretacins. And he says it very directly. How long has it been since you were intimate with a woman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Archer doesn't like this.
No, nobody likes it, Clayton.
Nobody likes it. Can you
No one likes it.
Can you imagine? You go to the vet because your dog is sick because you took it to a planet for some reason, and you're at the doctor and your dog's in a weird plastic box and you're watching it die, and then the vet looks at you and he goes, "You fuck, you like hey, big dog,
also,
hey, big
okay,
dog.
Listen.
When was the last time you fucked?"
Archer is like, "Oh, I suppose you must be a psychologist too." And he's like, "Yeah, of course I am." Which is
pretty funny,
honestly.
That's pretty funny, but also he shouldn't be.
This is an interesting perspective on relationships and sex and how men think about sex, because I'm like, is this like a known thing that if men or is this like, I guess not a known thing, is this like a sexist assumption from a patriarchal society that if a man doesn't have sex in a certain amount of time, he just gets angry and mean?
Isn't that a Seinfeld plot line?
So let me just say, the Seinfeld plot line is basically like the same as Volcel propaganda. George uses the fact that he's not had sex to hyper-focus his like fucking vril energy into being good at everything.
And so Star Trek is the opposite.
Well, yeah, I think there. Yeah, Star Trek is incel. Seinfeld is Volcel. I don't know. I flunked out of being a man, but like it does feel like a sort of thing where it's like, if you haven't gotten laid, you need to like, it's like, well, you have to fucking relax because you got like too much, you got cum jamming up your brain.
I guess, brother. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I think it really goes back to that. Like, you just,
but
you need
also,
to chill out.
You are
like,
the captain of a
starship. Yeah, I'm an adult man.
When are you having sex? Why are you having sex with someone who's not a subordinate? And you shouldn't be having sex with your subordinates.
Over it.
It's just like, you're like an adult. And okay, I did a little
jerk
a
off.
Little, yeah, just jerk it, Archer. Jesus Christ. I did a little math here. So between T'Pol and Archer, between the actors, there's a 21 year age difference. T'Pol is about 26 or 27, and Bakula is about 47 or 48 in this one. So it's also
cool.
I don't like that.
Yeah. So Jenna, I must clasp
yes,
my nose.
Oh, Clayton, lay it
the
on me.
The thing is,
yes.
is that technically Vulcan ages are different, and T'Pol is the older one in this relationship.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, T'Pol is like 100 or something.
Yeah,
right? Like she's older.
Yeah, and that's it's so funny that mentioned
T'Pol,
that.
No, sorry, T'Pol is 65 years old on this.
Yeah,
show.
Yeah, it's so funny you mentioned that, Clayton, because I know a lot of American weebs will be like, she's actually, I know she looks like she's 12, but she's actually immortal, so it's okay to sexualize her. That, in my experience with Star Trek fans, is exactly how they treat female Vulcans, which is that, first of all, they're always super, super young and super hot because it's Star Trek. Mm-hmm. They're always given the dopiest haircuts that, in my opinion, make them look even younger than they are. Not in like a high school way, but in a like, T'Pol's dumb haircut It's shot. I cannot imagine seeing an adult woman voluntarily going out without having done something to stylize it. So that makes her read to me so much younger. And it's just like, it's, I don't like it.
Oh, cause she, no, just cause she's not vain, Jenna, because she's logical.
No, I actually love her character. I wish they weren't trying to mash these two Barbie dolls together.
It does. It's so frustrating also when you know that she, like the actress, is a Star Trek fan who is like very excited to be cast as a Vulcan, and like, I can't imagine what it was like.
Bad.
So, okay. The Curtassans, they're getting mad at Hoshi because we didn't put the clocks on the right spaceship, whatever. It's not important.
You got to be on GMT. Fine. Thank you. Whatever.
In med bay, Phlox lets a bat creature escape. They have to, it's a little madcap, you know, bunch of scenes where they're trying to get the bat back together.
Phlox makes a giant origami crane, and they're like, this is a boom hawk, or whatever.
I thought that was very fun.
It's a practical effect. Somebody made that. Yeah. I saw. It's cool.
Fun. Someone made that. Someone did not make the bat.
No, not CGI.
The bat is stuck in a PlayStation 3 flying around. Yeah, it's like not great.
But kind of funny while this is happening is that Phlox is just like, any more thoughts about why T'Pol's opinion matters to you so much? And he's like, no. And Phlox is just like, sexual tension, my captain, no doubt in my mind. Yeah.
There's also a good bit where a bunch of goop drips on him. And
I almost missed that.
Archer goes, is that poisonous? And Phlox looks down, scoops up two fingerfuls, puts it in his mouth, pauses, and says, I'll be okay.
Yes. That is some great A Phlox. That's
really
what I like
good
to see.
Phlox. Phlox remains my dude.
It's pretty good.
My Polly King, Dr. Phlox.
And then, kind of weird, Hoshi walks in as they're still trying to capture this bat and just snatches it out of the air.
Yeah.
Just like,
no more fucking around.
She did teach in a magical rainforest university.
Oh, okay. You think there's...
is that where she picked that up? I don't know. It's very strange.
What I liked is that nobody acknowledged it as a very cool dope thing. It just happened and they all moved on.
I think it's like they were chasing it and she was like, hey man, what's up? And just put her hand out.
Yeah.
It kind of like lands on
it. It really felt like the writers were like, were there any other bits we wanted to do with the bat? No, we're done with the bat. Okay, then how do they catch the bat?
The bat.
Sato. Bam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a great communicator. She's like, hey.
She can communicate with anything. So I'm going to fast forward here just so we don't miss kind of like the important thing, which is that...
Like, this episode is just them going back and forth in a circle forever, so we can kind of...
Yes, so we've had time updates because this is all within one night, and they get to... The dog has to... It needs a transplant. We're gonna put this... I'm going to sacrifice my lizard, put its pituitary gland in there. It's going to be probably okay. I've never done this before, but trust me.
Yeah. I'm going to put your dog in a big tank. We're going to drill into his head.
Yeah.
The thing here is, though, Archer obviously keeps thinking about this sexual tension thing because he has a dream sequence,
which
is honestly kind of wild to me. Like, we haven't had a dream sequence
really?
Like this in the show.
No.
It's like thunderous rain in, like, Ireland, I don't know, in a funeral for his dog.
Erotic funeral.
And then suddenly, the first scene in the decon tam chamber, but instead... Archer and T'Pol stay, and they get naked and caress.
I liked the fanfic of this all, because it did feel like this is primo Star Trek fanfic territory, where it's like, oh no, we have to be trapped in this chamber together. Thank God Ensign Steve refilled the medical lube. What are we going to do with our time? It's just like, okay.
And you did a great job.
Thank you.
When we're at the surgery where Porthos is in a big tank of water, that's where Archer's finally like, okay, what if this was actually happening? What do I do about it? And Phlox's like recommendation is just acknowledge it. Just accept it in your mind. Don't try to deny it. The denial is the thing that's really getting to you. I feel like this isn't the worst recommendation of like kind of pop psychology on a TV show like this. Like it could have been worse.
Yeah.
But he's just like, don't address it directly.
I think it's solid advice. It's just like, it's a thing that's happening. Don't obsess over it, you creep.
Yeah. He gets off lucky, honestly. And then, okay, dog's fine. He goes and apologizes by cutting a ceremonial log with a futuristic chainsaw, wraps that storyline up in a bow.
Yep.
yelling a bunch of weird words at these people who, by the way, are disgusting to look at.
Yeah.
Do not
like them. That's an intense makeup.
I didn't like them the last time I saw them. It looks like every possible Star Trek species is mashed up into one fucking prosthetic.
Yeah. And they don't come back.
I also want to point out, it's a...
Really?
Do not pee on their tree, but it's fine if you cut it up.
It's fine.
We can't think too much. The Cretacins don't come back until...
It's fine. The Cretacins don't ever come back until... I think they're on
lower
decks.
They're on lower decks with a kind of funny joke, but yeah. Their makeup's too hard to do. So I don't know.
Goodbye, Cretacins. We'll never see... It's like a lot of an Enterprise species.
Exactly.
You see them once and then never get in any other Star Trek, and it's like... I guess we just never talked to them.
They died out or something.
Well, and I think this is why Archer submitted the most insane report about their behavior. And so every Starfleet in the future has just avoided talking.
These guys are way too uptight. Just don't.
every Starfleet ship has a dog.
Yeah.
So they feel like we're not going back.
Yeah. But then to wrap up the last storyline. Okay. T'Pol and Archer have a chat. He's basically like, I'm sorry for how I've been. I've been under a lot of stress, but I shouldn't have treated you that way. And T'Pol's just like, basically trying to say like, you don't have to apologize. It's not a big deal. Friction is to be expected when people work together in close quarters. And Archer's like, it's even worse when they're the opposite sex. You didn't have to say that, Archer.
He's testing the ground. He's pushing a boundary to see how much she's going to push back. It's unacceptable. He's the fucking captain.
It was like, this was kind of going okay. Yeah. And then you just had to.
He just wanted to test the waters. And T'Pol is sort of like, first of all, it's so annoying to me that she doesn't just accept the apology. She fucking deserves an apology.
I know. I was on her side in this. And then her response, well, good thing you're my superior
too
officer.
Too horny by half.
And we,
so horny.
And we aren't in a position to allow ourselves to be attracted to each other. And it's like, okay, I know that this doesn't go anywhere, so that feels like a very weird thing to say.
That's so fun. Really, they don't like,
because
they don't
it's
ever,
no,
like,
it's
hook up.
Her and Trip. That's who ends up together by
it's
the end.
It's never picked up ever again, Jenna.
That's actually
great. It
goes
great. Away forever.
Yes. I'm actually very into that. That is how this story should end, with both of them being like,
professional.
No. We are going to be professionals about this. Wow, okay, so the show did one thing right. Okay.
Kind of, yeah, I guess. I don't know. I can't say much about Trip to Paul relationship, but it's better than this one. Barely.
Yeah, it's like saying like you were trying to go walk into a volcano, but you fucked up and instead got lost in the forest. Like, it's like, like you're still just a moron. Like, you're not doing any of this on purpose. You're just stumbling around blindly.
But I don't know. Jenna, it's been lovely having you here. We went through that pretty fast there. But if there's anything you like really wanted to talk about, I know we didn't talk about as many wives.
Yeah. That's a great point. That'll be my last comment on this show, is that it was really funny to me that Phlox got the queer treatment, which is that you can talk about these crazy relationships, but God forbid you ever show them or acknowledge them. Like, he'll never walk in with a wife on either arm and both of those wives with their husbands on either arm, because that would be too much for Lawrence. Maddie, am I wrong?
There's an episode where you get at least one of his wives, and there's a lot of talk about his relationships in the show.
Singular? I'm just saying that this is, at this period, you would often have gay, I mean, you still, this is still a thing where you'd have like a gay character, but never shown on a date with another queer person. You never actually get the content. You just get them talking about how they're definitely queer in some way. And you don't, but you never actually have to confront that, because they never kiss anybody or like have a relationship.
And as much as I don't love this episode, I thought it made sense to talk about here.
I mean, I was excited to hear that context on him. Good character.
It's one of his more interesting character traits. But to your point, I wish it was more on screen.
Phlox being solo poly. Yeah. Jenny, you want to plug?
Plug away.
Yeah. You can find me on the internet. I do video essays at youtube.com/@the_Jenna. And I live stream on YouTube and on Twitch. I'm on Twitch at twitch.tv/the_Jenna. And I'm just out there doing it. I'm just doing it out there.
Hell yeah. I'll put the show notes.
I just released a video essay on mouthwashing.
I loved that one. Yeah. Yes, I was going to bring up the mouthwashing one.
That's part of why I'm going so hard on Captain Archer, because I have on my mind Captain Lethier.
No.
Yeah, we need to have higher standards for our captains. That's what I'll say.
What a pairing. Well, on that note,
Thank you so much.
Playmouth Washing.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Watch Jenna's videos.
I love the show. I am looking forward to not watching the rest of Enterprise and just.
We're just going to keep having you back.
You are free. You are free. All right. Well, this has been Temporal Culture War. I am Clayton Ashley.
And I am Madam Chase.
And as always,
let's go.
Let's go.
They couldn't have even come up with like a good tagline.